I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Recall the Midwife. We are a fan podcast of Call the Midwife. We are watching an episode and we discuss. Today we are doing a Series 7 recap. I'm Alex.
I'm Becky.
I'm Jen. And usually I would give in this portion a little synopsis of some of the more complex and like challenging issues in the episode. But as all of our faithful listeners know, and if you're new, we're going to let you know that this is the recap episode where I go through all the episodes. I pick out some really fun quotes and then we basically play a game to guess kind of like who said it, what the context is, just revisit some of our favorite storylines and scenes and everything. But I also try to keep it a little bit on the lighter side because the show can be kind of heavy and we really want to embrace the softer, sweeter side of Call the Midwife. So go. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
As we'll
I revised last time. I haven't done it this time.
To be fair, you revised last time and it didn't help. So
no, it didn't.
Well, and I'll just say, and I say this every single time, but I always go back through the episodes and I'm just like, wait a minute, this was the episode and this is the, and so-and-so came and so-and-so came. So anyways, so this series is a series where we met Lucille. Remember, she came first episode of series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, she was running late in the first episode. And then I do think there's a quote or two that we literally just talked about last week when we recorded. So we'll see if that helps in terms of you guys remembering. But okay.
Probably won't help.
And occasionally I'll try to pepper in some really fun and funny and very, very bad accents, you know, just to make it more lighthearted. Okay.
A little bit.
All right. Oh, I don't know about these American pop groups. There's such a lot of slang in their songs and their diction leaves a lot to be desired.
We both know. Thanks.
It's Sheila. Yeah. Who was she talking about? Which pop group was she talking about though?
She's so fine. Do lang, do lang, do lang.
Yeah. Is it like Shangri-La's or something? Do-lang,
do-lang. Which is probably the tamest American pop group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know nothing about them, but I'm assuming.
Yeah. Well, the scene is the Turners are driving in the car and yes. Tim is like, turn up the radio, Dad. And like, just prior to that, Trixie, they're kind of starting their morning and everything. And she's like, oh, let's turn on some music and we'll have some fun with this girls. And because they're still really cold, because they're still getting over the frozen snow and everything from the big freeze. Yeah. So they put on the radio and all the nurses, it's like, it's who is it? It's Tracy,
yes,
Val
dancing.
And
in the clinical room. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like kind of bopping. And then it cuts to the Turners. And then Tim's like, turn it up, Dad, in the backseat. And she was like, oh, I don't know about these American pop groups. And then she and then she goes on. And you know, Tim's like, oh mom, like be cool or you know, whatever. And Dr. Turner just laughs. So anyways, it's a very sweet. It's a very sweet song. Okay, so that's sort of episode one. All right, next quote. My first responsibility is to ensure the consumption of this cake.
That has got to be Sister Monica Joan.
Yes, Mojo herself. Yeah. Do we remember?
Purely on the cake consumption.
Yes, but do you remember why she says she has to consume the cake?
Is it within the power? Oh, hang on. Am I getting episodes mixed up?
We're still in episode one.
That doesn't help.
Wait. Is it because they're worried that Lucille is late?
Yeah, was it the cream?
Yes, exactly. So they have this beautiful cake there, and it's got like a scalloped edge, and it's got little pipettes of, you know, frosting and everything, and little strawberries and stuff. And they're like, can we eat this? And, you know, she's not here yet. We really want to eat it. And they said, well, I don't know if it's going to keep. And then I guess Phyllis says it depends on whether that's real cream or fresh cream or not. And Winifred says, oh, it's fresh cream. And then it's like, oh, well, it really won't keep. So we kind of have to start eating it.
I guess
and
it
then
would this keep in a frozen thing. I remember Beck said that at the time, like it would keep when it's freezing.
Well, if you freeze it, it will. But the thing is, like a fresh cream cake isn't going to, the whipped cream won't keep for very long.
But it was the big freeze, wasn't it? Like just put it outside or the rats would get to it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that's really good. Yeah. But then it's when Sister Julian turns to Sister Monica Joan and is saying that she should go through the newspaper. She says, I have a job for you.
Yes.
And then Monica Jonas says, no, my first job is to eat this cake. And this is also the beginning of when we start to sense that she has some vision problems. Remember?
Yes.
So, yeah. So that's the second quote. All right. Now, there was a lot of other stuff happening in this episode that
it seems like about 12 years ago.
I know. But then my next quote is, motherhood starts here with a vengeance.
Is it old Jenny?
No.
No.
But it is a midwife.
Oh, I know. Is it Nurse Crane?
No, but but you're gonna be like, oh, I love this when she did this. Like, this was just such a strong way for her to be.
Oh, no. It's Val.
No.
Is it Barbara?
No.
We're Barbara's doing so
not,
well.
Barbara's not even back yet. She and Tom are still in Brighton or
Winifred.
Birmingham or whatever. No.
Who's left?
Ladies, we were just talking about her.
Sister Monica Joan.
No. What?
Sheila.
No. What was the cake for? What was the cake for?
Lucille!
So, okay, you won't remember this clearly, but remember...
I don't remember it at all.
So this is the episode where there was a pregnant lady who was doing, like, striptease dances named Nadine. With the fur coat, and she had to leave that business because she couldn't do her job anymore, basically. And so after she gives birth, and with the help of the midwives like picking her up and everything, she goes back and gets her pay that she was owed and everything like that. But she has to give birth. Breach and Trixie and Lucille are delivering the baby, and Trixie is like guiding her from the pregnancy, like from the birth end of it, and Lucille is by her shoulders holding her, and Lucille says, come on now, you can do it, like one more big push, motherhood starts here with a vengeance. And you know, because it's a breech birth and it's really painful and it's like it's really tough for her, so that was kind of Lucille. Yeah.
And then Nadine buys the dance school, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Val's like aunt. Yes, exactly.
Auntie Edie. Or
Aunt Edith? Edie. Yes, Edie. Yes. Like Madam Edith's dance school for little kids or something like that.
Yeah.
All right. So here, I'm just going to give you a hint. The next set of quotes is from episode 2. Okay.
That doesn't help us, Jen.
Well, at least unless you think I'm still quoting you from episode 1 and you've like refreshed your memory. Okay, here we go. Wool crafts are the refuge of a dull mind.
Sister Monica Joan.
Sister Monica Joan. Do you remember?
And it's
because
she's basically blind, isn't she? So she doesn't want to do it.
Yes, but do you remember why she's kind of doing that? Like what the activity is that they're asking her to join in on that she's like no.
Isn't it to make hats or something for Pinky and Perky?
No, you talked about this when we talked about the episode, and this person was your zero. And you were like, because of blah, she annoys me because of blah.
God, I can't think of my own mind.
Were they tapestrying those the kneelers in church?
No.
Oh.
Okay, here's a hint. They were making this for one of the classes at the clinic.
With the bully boobs.
Woolly boobs, yes. And you remember it was Winifred who was making the woolly boobs, and she had a whole pattern and it was a whole thing, and you were really annoyed at her because you were like, oh, she's all woolly boobs, and you know, blah, blah, blah. So, okay. All right, now, here we go. Next quote. The surprise in my case being that sugar burns remarkably quickly under the grill.
Trixie, about her surprise Her grapefruit surprise.
Was she cooked for? Has she cooked for? Who she cooked for?
Christopher Dockrell.
Do you know what I was going to say? Matthew. She's cooked for Matthew for the first time.
Can I just tell you? I've got a fun French fact for you. The word for grapefruit in French is pamplemousse.
Oh yeah, I knew that.
I didn't know that.
I knew that. Yeah,
pamplemousse surprise. She should have said
pamplemousse surprise. Well, the thing that made me laugh when I was watching this again was that she brings Crystal, not Crystal. She brings Christopher.
Crystal's into... the one who was a dentist.
She brings Christopher into the kitchen, you know, not really dining room, whatever, the area where she's going to host the thing. And she's like, oh, you know, they're like, she calls it like an intimate dinner party for two. And I just thought it was like hilarious that she's like, I'm hosting a dinner party. And then she gives like the three rules.
Piece of fruit.
Yeah, exactly. That she's like gives the three rules of how to have a good dinner party in it. And she's like, you know, the food must be impeccable, the company scintillating, and, you know, the something something else or whatever. And she's like, at least I got two out of three or whatever. And she puts down this like burnt grapefruit and everything. But just, I don't know, just it's hilarious. Just intimate dinner party for two. I just.
And yeah. Christopher really just wants to get his leg over.
Say how you say it, Bex.
He's like, how quickly can I get through the grapefruits before, you know, we can get onto the good stuff? Oh, man. Well, this is also the time when we were mad at him because, not mad at him, but like we were kind of saying that he's like, oh, it's okay, Trixie, like you idiot that you can't make a grapefruit. You know, like we can always make omelets if we have to and I'll make them.
No, it was
them
jam
because...
on toast. It wasn't even omelet.
Oh, jam on toast. Jam on toast. Yeah. And he's like, I'll make sure I make the toast though so it doesn't burn. And she's like, oh my God. So anyways. All right. Next quote. It's easy to overburden a man. They think they must give the impression of being more substantial than they actually are.
Nurse Crane.
There we go. Do you guys know?
But why did she say it?
Who was she talking about?
Was she talking to a mother who'd just given birth?
No.
Was it? Oh, Dennis. His wife Marjorie had a stroke.
No. That wasn't the series.
Are they talking about Christopher?
Oh, it was the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. But no, it wasn't about that.
Are they talking about Christopher?
No. This was like a B pregnancy, like a B storyline pregnancy.
I know. It was Alan in the
tracksuit.
In the van having the baby.
There we go. Yeah.
Oh, I loved Alan.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Romaine, you know, he's like, oh, my mom says we're so soppy, you know, like they're just so in love. And she wants to show up all the other ladies at the maternity class because she's like, well, my Alan wants to come to class. He wants to be there for the birth. And Alan's like, I really don't want to do any of those things. And the reason that they have the conversation and Phyllis says this is because Winifred is worried about it. And she's like, how do we kind of deal with this? Because he said he doesn't want to come to the birth and his wife is really upset. Well, then she goes to have a conversation with him. And he, I'm spoiling the quote that I put here, but anyways, but he says that he was the oldest of like six or eight kids and his mom always gave birth at home. And he remembers her screaming during those live births. And it just really terrified him as a child. And he, even though, you know, she was always okay, it sounds like he's like, I just don't know if I can go through it again. It's really horrible.
But then he really steps up.
He does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the thing that happens is he's talking about it and Winifred kind of stops him and she says, okay, I understand. And she goes, the fears we have in the present often lie in the experiences of the past. And it sounds really elementary, but that is just such a really, really good way of describing like a traumatic experience.
Well, that's actually very eloquent. That's a nice way of saying it.
That is. You don't expect it from Winifred.
Yeah, I know. Every once in a while she has these really like, you know, beautiful moments. But I was like, oh, you know, that just felt very illuminating. So I put that quote in as well.
That birth just reminds me of. So that birth, I felt really bad for him because obviously then he did step up and do it. He was like, yes, I'll do it next time. She was like, no, you bloody won't. You're a bit like, oh, do you know what? He really stepped up. It reminds me of that. You know, there's Mike, was it Michael Sumter? Where he did this big speech and it was really good. And everyone was like, yes, well done. And then he still went to prison for 3 years. You're a bit like, you've done all this effort. You stepped up and it still made no difference.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite part of the scene with Alan was when he's basically down the business end, she's about to give birth, Sister Winifred arrives. Was it Sister Winifred who arrives?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she says, have you got something to wrap the baby in? And he basically isn't moving from the spot. He just kind of directs Sister Winifred to the front of the car and she's like, no, you get the football.
Well, and what's funny about that is when Phyllis says the thing about men not being as like strong as they say they are or whatever, is that Phyllis is like, oh yeah, you know, and they have this like really nice moment, and then Phyllis goes, can I borrow your car? And Phyllis is like, nope. And then she just keeps walking. And then when it's time for Mrs. Romaine to give birth, never forget, Winifred, I mean, she doesn't steal it, but she steals Phyllis's car and she leaves it in the road with the keys inside of it.
Oh,
And then
yeah.
that's when Phyllis gets in trouble with Buckle, not Buckle, the whatever, the police officer.
Wolf, Sergeant Wolf.
Yeah, because they'd had a whole conversation about, you know, cars getting stolen, and she's like, "Well, I always make sure my car is well accounted for and locked up, you know, appropriately and all that kind of stuff like that." But it's Winifred doing what she should not do that
Yeah.
makes a mess. So,
That bit you just said about when Nurse Crane was like, nope, it reminds me of yesterday. I went to a soft play with my daughter for a birthday party. And one of the books, don't know why she did this. I'm going to do a shout out. Like, if she listens, it's your own fault. She bought, you know, those stupid machines where you put a quid in and it's got like these little balls that come out and they've got crappy little toys in that are just rubbish. She bought one for her daughter and then her daughter's friend. So then they were all came over asking. And I was just like, my daughter came over and she was like, please, can I have a thing? Nope. Just straight away. And my friend was like laughing because she just walked off because she knew she wasn't going to get one. So instead of like whining, being like, oh, I think she just thought, do you know what? I just know I'm not going to bother. There's no point. You know, I'm going to. I was
know,
like, nope.
I've been at a party when I've had to tag along, and I've seen you do that before as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just, you know, my word is my bond bags.
Yeah, don't dress it up, just tell it how it is.
You're
Yeah,
just
but
like
what? There's no
Fred.
point in saying I'm sorry because I'm not sorry. You're not having one. I'm done. Go and
I
enjoy the
know.
party.
I
I'm
know.
cruel. Carry on, sorry.
Well, also, like, birthday parties are filled with tons and tons of, like, any, you know, like, lot, like, yeah.
Well, I was just like, you know, you're
There
here
doesn't
for a
need to be
party. Go and
more.
play with the party girl. Go and have fun. Go and play with the birthday girl.
Yeah, also you're gonna forget that toy 1 second after you bought it.
Oh,
You know what I mean?
honest.
Like
Well, one of them actually lost the toy in the ball pit. And then my daughter, we sent him on a quest because my daughter loves a quest and she's actually brilliant at looking for stuff because she's got really good eyesight. So we sent them on a quest to try and find it. This other girl who had it was crying her eyes out. And I just thought, you know what? I knew this, what, you know, this is going to happen. Don't buy those stupid little things. Anyway, so my daughter did actually find it for her. And it was like, hey, this big quest that she did it.
There we go. There we
Yeah.
go.
Yeah.
Okay. Episode 3. I'd put a poplar woman in charge. Anyone who's seen my auntie at closing time on a Saturday knows you don't put up with any messing.
Val.
It's got to be Val.
It has to be Val, of course. Yeah. Poplar till she dies. Yes, exactly. Do you remember when she said this, though?
Yes, in the beauty pageant.
And what was, do you remember what the prompt was?
Something about running the world. Who would you put in charge of the country or something, maybe?
Yeah, like how would you make sure it was worded better than this, but it was like Fred's question was like, how would you ensure world peace or
Oh, that's
something
it,
like that? Yeah, and
yeah.
she said, I'd put a poplar woman in charge, you know, we don't put up with any messing, because like if any and you, and her mom and her not her auntie, her auntie runs the pub. She
Yeah.
runs like the Black Sail or something like that, or
Yeah. Yeah,
the
it's Black Sail.
yeah. So, okay. So now remember that piece of context, because maybe this will help you with the next one. I believe she may have sought solace in the seedlings among Fred Buckle's allotment.
Well, we know who
Is
it's
it the
about.
nanny?
Huh?
It's the nanny, the au pair.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Magda, but I think it's Sister Monica Joan, Mojo.
Mojo!
Oh yeah, because she spotted her when she came back and she took the
Ergometrine.
ergometrine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was the only one at home when they were doing the pageant, and this lady came in and she was like banging around in the clinic room, and Sister Monica Joan heard her.
Also,
And
I
by
like the way Sister Monica Joan phrased it, that she'd sought solace, not that she'd gone somewhere to collapse in a heap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's very eloquent, like beautiful speaking lady, you know what I mean?
I do like some others.
All right.
With a
Now, I don't
podcast.
know. I was feeling a bit sappy when I was doing this, so I put in some of these type of quotes, okay? Love is always deserved by everyone, but it is not always given, no matter where we search or however much we long for it.
Oh, Jenny.
Mature Jenny.
I love the way she hates us calling her old Jenny. Where old Jenny? Oh, what's she talking about, old Jenny?
Well, it's episode 3. I mean, girls, put it together.
About Magda?
Well, this,
No.
you know, every
All
week she has
right,
this is every week at the end of the episode, she has her like closing little synopsis where she's like,
yeah.
matter what we do, we're always, you know, at home. You know, like she always has these like things she says. This is the ending little synopsis for this episode, and it's like Magda had her pregnancy, like the pageant. What other storyline was going on in this episode? Trixie and Christopher. Yeah, they're having their own things or whatever. But the thing that I just really wanted to say, because I'm just feeling very, very sappy at the moment, is like, she's right. Love is always deserved by everyone. And sometimes you're not going to get it from the people that you wish would give it to you. And sometimes if you look for it, you're not going to find it. And that is really sad. And it is really hard. But, and just like, forgive me for saying this, but the thing is, the first place you have to look is inside yourself. And you have to love yourself first before anything. And
I know it's totally true, though.
I know, but I just thought about that, because the thing is that like a lot of times we're looking for validation externally, and it's like, no, I mean, it's great to get it, but the place all of that has to start is inside of each one of us. And it's a really hard lesson to learn, and sometimes it feels like, oh, well, you know, whatever, but it's really true. And you have to give yourself love before you can give love to anybody else, and you can't wait for other people to give it to you. You deserve to have it from day one. So anyway, sorry, I just had to go there.
Oh my God, Jenny, you're
final. I don't know. Well, I was telling you guys before we got on the air, it's been a really, really long blipping week. Also, by the way, I know. It's just been a hard time. It's just been a hard time. Also, I watched this J-Lo documentary on Amazon Prime called The Greatest Love Story.
I've seen a lot of chat about this.
The Greatest Love Story Never Told. And I'm just, and like, it just, and I just found it really frustrating. Like, I didn't watch the movie she made, like, because I just couldn't. I was like, I can't deal with that nonsense. But I watched the documentary because I was kind of curious. Also because it's got Ben Affleck in it. It's got, like, all of the people in her life that, like, helped her make this movie. And she talks about basically how Ben Affleck is, like, the love of her life. And how when they broke up, you know, she was so devastated. She was so shattered and everything. And she's like, you know, you move on and everything. And it makes it seem like that you're doing okay. And that, you know, you're handling it and that you're over it or whatever. But you're really not over it. And she's like, you know, I've been searching for, you know, love all my life. And blah 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 blah. And I just was like, and it, I mean, I'm not trying to like make it more than it is, but at the same time I was like, J-Lo, I'm like, no man is gonna make you feel like you're enough, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't come from anybody else. Like, okay, like, you know what I mean? Like, don't look for that in other places. Like, look for it in yourself. Like, you don't need a husband to make you feel good, you know what I mean? Like, you need your own self.
It doesn't work.
Well, that's the thing. Like, nobody's going to be able to fill that hole inside of you if you don't fill it for yourself. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. No one is going to make you like, it doesn't matter, like, how many love affairs you have. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're, like, your mom, your dad, your sister, your brother, your friends, whatever like that. Like, it's great to have people in your life. Like, obviously, everybody needs that. And, like, it's wonderful to have loving relationships. But, like, start with right here, you know?
Jen's pointing to herself, by the way. We're on a podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've read online about that. Like, it's really harsh on her kids or his kids or something. Some of the lines in it, like, completely discounting his other relationships.
Yeah, why is it controversial, Jen?
Well, I think, I mean, for me, it was controversial because, I mean, you're basically saying, like, I mean, he says less in it than she does, but they start, I mean... Well, I'll just say this. We're going to talk about this for a couple minutes. So any listeners who don't want to know anything about this, like, just skip ahead, like, a couple minutes. But, like, the thing starts with the fact that she says that when her and Ben Affleck got back together after, like, 20 years of not being together because of, like, they broke up and then they married other people and all this other business, that he gave her a book filled with all of, like, the letters and cards and everything that they didn't exchange with each other while they were together. And maybe... like,
and he'd kept those all that time he was with Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, and it was a book like this. It was like inches thick, basically.
Yeah, but he's rich. And he's got the storage.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, oh my God. And he like, she was like, this is so amazing or whatever. And then she was gonna write an album based on this amazing love story that she and Ben were rehashing, I guess. And she brought the book like to the recording studio, and she was letting everybody look through it like while they were recording, and she was writing all these songs.
Ugh.
Which, and he was like, oh my God, are you serious, really? And he says that in the documentary. He's like, I really can't believe that you did that. Well, then she's like, I want to write an album all about our love, like all about everything about our love. And he's like, well, I really don't want you to do that, but okay, whatever. So then she does it, and then he's like, I want to make a movie about it, and I want to make a documentary to go with it. And he's like, okay. He's like, well, you know, all right, I guess. And he kind of says, like, I'm more private, like, I want us to be private, but she wants to be out and about. And he's like, so, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But then she says the thing about, you know, Ben was the love of her life. And it's like, and she's like, yeah, you know, I like after we broke up and everything, she's like, you know, you move on, you're with other people, all come out like that. But, you know, we got back together and I just feel like, you know, this is like the most like amazing love story that's ever been lived by anyone. And, you know, by watching us, you should know that, you know, you never give up hope. Like you should always be able to find love, like blah, blah, blah. And I just was like, so you got married and you were married for 10 years to a man and you had two kids with him, your son and daughter. And you're basically acting like that relationship wasn't like really anything at all. That was what I found to be like really hard about it. And then also like the way that she's conflating, you know, their relationship being like more meaningful and more important than anything the other one has ever done. And I was like, well, Ben was married too for like over a decade and he had three kids out of his marriage. So like, what is that saying? It just was, I don't know. I just was like, the documentary is there's a lot going on in it. But at the same time, I was just like, oh my dear. Oh,
yeah. I'm going to need to watch that.
I know, I don't want to watch it either. I really don't want to watch it, but now I'm going to have to. Sounds awful.
Well, the thing is, it's just, I will say what was absolutely hilarious to me was how many times she was like, I'm an artist. I'm an artist and I have to do this. I need to do this. I'm an artist. I have to do this.
You know what? Like, I think the world would be absolutely fine, J-Lo, not hearing about yours and Ben Affleck's love story. Not going to lie.
Oh, I was rooting for Bennifer from both times.
To be honest, well, I was rooting for Jennifer. I didn't really like him. I was like a bit like, he was treating her a bit rubbish, so I just want her to be happy. I don't care about him or J-Lo.
Jennifer, do you mean Garner, Jennifer Garner?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Jennifer Garner, I meant.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're both called Jennifer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, if like I mean I hope the way that she's talking about this that they actually do stay married, because I would just hate to think that like all this fuss over two people who end up breaking up in like a couple years or whatever like that. But at the same time, I was just like, oh my god, there's just so many red flags. There's just, yeah. Well, no, that's the thing, there's so many red flags about it, and I'm just like, you guys, come on now. I just can't. Also, like, I always feel very skeptical whenever someone's like, no one's ever done anything like this ever before, you know? And I just am like, well, probably they have, honestly. Like, really almost nothing is original at this point in the game. But, you know, okay, whatever. That's fine. Do what you want. And I mean, like, there are original things, but I'm just saying, like, when it comes to, like the anything creative, you know what I mean? Like, there's no story that hasn't been told. Like, there's no...
Yeah,
I was just like, you're not exploding the form, J-Lo. Come on now. I like J-Lo. I don't have a really an issue against J-Lo, but I'm just like, ma'am.
I do now. Right, next quote.
All right, episode 4. Nursing is about curing patients, blank, not our own broken hearts.
Is this Trixie?
Oh, it's about Trixie.
Yeah.
From Nurse Crane.
Yes. 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 And she's just broken up with Christopher Dockrell.
Is it to do with the lunts? She's trying to sort all the lunts together.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
And keep them together. And
well, no, not really so much that Trixie just wants to keep working. She just wants to throw herself into work, and Phyllis enforces like a time off period.
And I think Phyllis is out of order for this.
You think so?
Well,
she's also got a patient's safety to think about.
Yeah, but sometimes work is a good distraction.
Yeah, but if you're doing like proper midwifery stuff with people's lives and stuff, and you're not getting enough sleep. And you're just overworking yourself. You do have a duty of care as someone who's sorting out the rotors and stuff to be like, do you know what? You need to take some time out. Yeah, but I don't.
Trixie wasn't out of line.
Yeah, but if she's not sleeping and she's trying to do extra work and extra work.
You're thinking about series 13.
Oh, am I?
Well, I'll just say this.
In series 7, she's sleeping fine.
She's
a bit heartbroken.
No, Bex, you and I both know that she's not, because this is when she starts drinking again.
Well, yeah, there is that.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, I think Phyllis is right. Like, it is a good distraction, but the thing is, a lot of times people will not deal with their feelings or process, like, the events that happen in their lives because they don't want to feel the pain. And then it means that you're just end up, like, you're staying hurt, you're staying in a bad place, but you're covering it up. That's not real healing. And, like,
maybe if Phyllis had let her work through it, she wouldn't have turned to the bottle again.
Well, wait, so let me finish my statement, though. But so the thing that I found funny about this is that Phyllis makes her take a break, which ultimately she needed, like, the break that she got wasn't enough because then she has to, like, go away for, like, a real, like, a long, long break. But the thing is, Phyllis doesn't take her own advice when Barbara dies, and then she keeps working all the way through it. And she's got her lumbago and, you know, on and on and on. And it's like, well, Phyllis, like, you just suffered a huge, huge loss. Why aren't you taking a break? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, you hypocrite.
Well, I mean, I don't think Phyllis is a hypocrite, but honestly, yes. I'm like, you have more sense, like, to give someone else the advice, but take your own advice.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Where immortality is concerned, the coiffure is an irrelevance.
It's Fallow Trixie.
No.
It's Sister Mojo.
It's Mojo, and it is to one of those ladies. And do you know what it's about? Like, what the context is?
Is it to Valerie about her hair?
No.
To Trixie about her hair?
No. But it is to Trixie.
Is it about when she split up with Christopher Dockerill?
No. It's not about either girl's personal selves. It's about something else that's going on in the world.
Well, yep. I know Kennedy is assassinated.
Okay, prior to that.
The space race?
Yes, and what's the big... But before the Apollo part of the space race that we encounter, what happens before that?
The Russian cosmonaut.
Yes, exactly. And Trixie is reading the article in the newspaper, and she's like, oh, but, like, her hair is going to be ruined or something like that, and with her helmet or whatever. And Sister Monica Joan is like, where immortality is concerned, the coiffure is an irrelevance. Like, who cares about her hair? You know what I mean? Like, and then she says, this woman's name that none of us can remember or know is going to go down in history among the ages as a blah, blah, blah. Now, she is in the history books. But we just don't. Yeah. We just don't talk about her. Well, she's a Russian woman cosmonaut, I think.
And she voted for the invasion of Ukraine, so she's canceled.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Okay, yeah, you said that when we watched. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, similar, so this gives you a hint, but she says, or whoever this is, says, I look upon the astronaut and myself as brides of science and courteously invite you to do likewise.
It's got to be Mojo again.
It is.
Is it about her eyesight? Is it about her art?
Yes. And do you know who she says it to?
Julianne.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Because they've been fighting with her basically to get this surgery for the whole episode. And she says, no, I'm going to go blind. Like, you can't make me. I'm not doing it. And then Fred has a conversation with her in the chapel. And basically he says, if you never do anything you're afraid of, then nothing ever happens. And, like, look at the astronaut. Like, she probably was afraid when they put her in the rocket. But, you know, she decided to take a leap, kind of a thing. And then Sister Monica Joan is like, oh my goodness. And then that's when she literally runs into Sister Julianne's office, and she's like, I'm having the surgery. And Sister Julianne looks at her and says, oh, okay, you are, you know? And then she says, yes, you know, like, and how does she says something before she says this line, but she's like, myself and the astronaut are both charting on uncharted waters, or I mean, it's a better line than that. And then Sister Julianne goes, I don't really think it's fair to compare cataract surgery with space flight. And then that's what Sister Monica Jones says, we're brides of science and I courteously invite you to look at this the same way, you know. And Sister Julianne is like, you know what, whatever gets you there, I don't care. Yes, okay, fine, like, you're the exact same. So it's just a great scene. Okay, and again, this is me being very soppy. Sometimes one small gesture can give us the strength to do enormous things. And together or alone, we are closer than we know.
Oh, Jenny.
Yes. You know what? I need a t-shirt that says Mature Jenny, because I just
also
think...
it's really apt for you, because people will be like, she's just wearing, it's just Jen's in her twilight years.
I know, I just think it would be so funny on, like, so many levels. I really need a shirt that says that.
I was thinking more about cheese, but that was Bex was even more brutal.
So this So I'm not really doing a good job with, but so this is the end of this episode basically. And I just thought this was really powerful. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen this thing where it goes, again, sorry to reference TikTok, but it's going around TikTok where it's like, explain like one small thing, or like, tell me like a time where one small thing really changed your life. And then people will tell, you know, these small things or whatever. And some of them I think are just not really. Some people aren't telling a story that really illustrates the point of that. But I do think that sometimes one small gesture can give us the strength to do enormous things. Like, sometimes you just need that one thing to click in you. And then all of a sudden you can kind of really accomplish something amazing in your own life, or for, you know, a bigger art audience than even that or whatever. But I don't know. I just really liked it.
Yeah.
And I just like the idea that, like, we're all a lot more tied to each other than I think we give ourselves credit for. You know, we're a community. So,
yeah.
Okay. Episode 5. Oh, I'm worried silly already, doctor.
I'm worried silly already.
Mm-hmm.
Is it someone who's worried about childbirth?
No.
What could it be? Why are they talking to Dr. Turner about being worried? Oh, is it? Oh, no. I thought it was to do with the inspections, but that was the last series, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the phobia of childbirth?
No, but someone is worried about their child. Not their biological child, but their child.
Oh, is it? Violet. Mm-hmm. About Reggie.
Reggie, yes. Because he's just come back and said he has a secret friend, and they think that Reggie has smallpox. Yes, exactly. Okay, next quote. All right. Law of averages says you'll get 2 vomits and 3 caught shorts.
This is a coach journey.
Is it Fred?
Yes. You remember when?
Yeah, they were going to the picnic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And who had the bucket? Nurse Crane, a bucket of sand.
Yes. She says, I've got a bucket and a bucket of sand, so I'm ready for anything, kind of thing. And then they take what's it? What's that thing? Slingshot away from that little boy.
Jeffrey.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey.
Yeah. And caught shorts means
going to the toilet, like,
yeah.
Okay.
Like, you should have gone.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so we're at the picnic, so this is very fun. I'm afraid I don't care if you don't like potted beef. Once you've bitten into it, you can't put it back.
Violet.
No.
But who's she talking to?
But close.
Nurse Crane.
Yes, there you go.
To one of the scouts.
Yes, exactly. So it's a little boy named Dean, and he literally takes a sandwich off the plate and bites it, and then he's like, oh, I don't like this. And she's like, well, I really don't care if you don't like it. Once you've eaten it, you can't put it back.
I literally saw that happen today at a kid's pie. So, you know, times haven't moved on that much.
Well, I still sometimes have anxiety as an adult. Like, have you ever been to, you know, like a buffet or a luncheon or a dinner or something where there's a lot of foods and you're not sure what everything is? And you think like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to really like that. Or not like it. And so you don't, like, I do a thing where I'm like, I want to taste like a little bit of everything and see what I like the most, and then go back for the thing I like the most. Does anyone else do this?
I do it because I feel like I need to do polite size portions, but what I actually want to do is an impolite size portion.
Just really quick, so I can't do a buffet because I'm allergic to egg. I can't be sure that it's not cross-contaminated, so I hate it. But so I went to a funeral the other day, and my brother, I'll tell you, number one, old people never move as fast as that when there's a buffet, there's a queue. Like, it's literally, you've never seen anything like it in your life. They are so quick. And number two, my brother had the biggest portion you have ever seen in your whole entire life. I've never seen anything like it in my whole entire life. He was,
oh my God.
I was just, are you hungry there? And he was like, wait, I'm starving. And it was quite a small plate, and it was so high.
Did you tell him off?
No, I was just like, you can go up again, you know. And he was wait.
So wait, what do you do in those situations? You just try not to eat anything, or you just try
I just,
to?
Well, I just can't eat anything. So I was absolutely starving the other day. So I just got some crisps behind the bar, but at least I know they're not contaminated. I just don't trust a buffet. I've had bad experiences, and you know, if you're at a funeral, you don't want to be having a second one.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I find them very hard, buffets. Very, very hard.
Yeah. So no matter what, if it's not food you've... But how do you know in a restaurant? I mean, how do you feel confident? Well,
restaurants anyway are loads better at doing it. But, like, you don't know if someone's been... with a buffet and stuff, you know, it's like little 12-year-olds putting it out and stuff. You don't know if they're resting somewhat on other things. And I don't know. I just feel very uncomfortable with a buffet.
And when you order at a restaurant, you can say, like, I'm severely allergic.
Yeah, sometimes I do. They ask about allergies. And, yeah.
Sometimes what if it was...
I
what if it,
say it. on Alex's behalf so she doesn't have to go through. I'm like, I will die if I eat egg.
Oh, I do hate it. I feel really awkward. I just do hate it, but yeah.
So with, well, anyways, I respect it. I respect it. Okay. I just want to keep myself on track here.
Well done.
Okay. We don't want your visit home ending in a Black Mariah.
What does that even mean?
Well, here's the thing. Do you want me to tell you what it means? Because I actually had a moment where I was like, what does this line mean? And so I Googled it because I was like, oh my God, wait a minute. What if this is like some foreshadowing or something? Which is a hint, by the way. But I Googled it and it says, the story goes that when the police needed backup to take a lawbreaker to jail, they would call for a Black Mariah. But I would say Maria, but that's just me. Referring to Maria Lee. When police vans, originally large, boxy, horse-drawn wagons, came about, they were painted black and named Black Maria in honor of Maria Lee. Now, I don't know who Maria Lee is, but anyways, so it's like all of, it's like when you basically cart off like a whole bunch of criminals all together.
Right, so what was the quote again?
So the question is, we don't want your visit home ending in a Black Maria or Mariah.
So whose visit home is going to cause the police?
We're still at the picnic. Think about what happens at the picnic.
Well, I know that Barbara returns home.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
And Barbara and Tom don't have anything for the picnic. So they stop and buy something for the shop on a Sunday. And Sheila says to her, because basically Sunday trading hours.
Yes, exactly. And she's like, oh, I don't really
Alex, hold with... Is your mind not blown that I just got that?
I'm really blown because I'm still really confused about the whole thing, but carry on. That was amazing. Well done. I never would have got that.
So Tom and Barbara
point checks.
Yeah. So Tom and Barbara come back to Poplar. They knock on the door of Nanata's house. No one's there. Winifred rushes out. She's like, oh my God, fifth baby in the West End. Like, I gotta go to birth. And so they're like, well, where is everybody? And there, and she says, something, something like Wetherington Woods or wherever she says. And then and then she's like, yep, it's a Poplar picnic and everything. And so they're like, okay, well, then Dr. Turner and Sheila, who got held up because they were left behind, you know, doing other stuff, come out and they bring Tom and Barbara there with them. But because they don't have anything, Tom's like, they're like, oh my God. And everyone's so surprised to see them. So they all give hugs. And then like, well, we didn't want to show up empty handed. So we brought cream cakes. And then that's when Sheila says, oh, she's like, you know, normally I don't like, you know, when a business is open on a Sunday, but I hardly think like this would be like a bad thing to enjoy or whatever. And everyone laughs. And then Phyllis goes, well, we don't want, yeah. She's like, yeah, we would, but we wouldn't want your first visit home ending in a Black Mariah, meaning like all of them would get arrested for having a legal
like cream cakes
basically. Yeah, exactly. But I was like, but I thought when I listened to it, Black Mariah or whatever, I was like, oh my God, is this like a foreshadowing line to Barbara getting sick? Like, we don't want your visit home ending in like some terrible illness or something like that. But then that wasn't what it was. So, you know, that wasn't what it was. Okay. All right, next one. And there, under a Caribbean sun that was as hot as the fire burning in his loins, Sebastian took her in his arms and kissed her thoroughly.
Sister Winifred reading Caribbean Kisses.
To Mojo in the hospital.
To Mojo and Maud. Is it Maud? Valentine?
I couldn't remember her name, so let's say yes.
I'm pretty positive it is.
Yeah. And yeah, it was just so cute and funny. And I just thought that was so hilarious. Like, you know, then, and all the women were like, ooh, 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 about this romance novel. So, okay.
I love the way Sheila said that she would have to read it before she put it into the maternity home just to check that it was okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Whole new episode, episode seven. Aren't they a bit, what? Undesirable? I'm trying to do some acting there. So this is two people speaking.
Undesirable.
Is it Trixie, one of them?
No. Hmm. So one person says, aren't they a bit? And then the other person says, what? And then the first person says, undesirable?
Is it Lucille about tampons?
No, it's not. No. It's not. Neither person is a woman.
Tampons aren't desirable, Alex.
Well, yeah, that's what they're saying, isn't it? Undesirable.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have that conversation about a tampon.
I just panicked. I was thinking about what happened in that episode.
No, this is not women speaking. Both people are not a woman.
Tom.
Fred.
No.
Dr. Turner.
Yes, but
Timothy.
Oh my God.
And Timothy.
And what are they speaking about?
Oh, we don't have tampons.
This is the only quote from this episode because this episode was too sad. And it's the episode where Barbara's really, really sick. But where is Dr. Turner in this episode?
Oh, is it
the prison?
Is it the not? Yeah,
the borstal.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes. And so at the beginning of that episode, what does Tim want to do?
He wants to go to the Rolling Stones.
Yes, yes, yes. So this is when he comes down and he's like, Dad, can I go see the Rolling Stones at the something something? And he goes, aren't they a bit? And then Tim is like, what? You know? And he goes, I'm desirable. And Tim is like, oh, Dad, you don't understand anything. And then he goes, and then that's when he gets in trouble. And that was the only quote I could pull from this episode because it was too sad and I was crying. Okay, episode 8. Here we go. We recount old beats of other stories. We retrace our steps, take refuge in echoes of that which is familiar. We follow custom and ritual because we have no map. We reach out blindly. We cannot see the path. And far from home, we cling to the way these things are always done.
Old Jenny.
Mature Jenny!
Old Jenny.
What's she talking about?
Talking about Barbara Dyne.
It's gotta be Barbara.
Yeah, and like again, I forewarned you that I was going to be really sappy this time, but like, yeah, I just had to put this in there because I mean, I said so much of this when we talked about the episodes like individually, so I'll try really to like not to say it again. But I just thought I had forgotten how. So this is actually one of her kind of like little like asides, kind of at the beat, but it's like mixed in with the rest of the episode, which usually it's not. Usually she either starts the episode or ends the episode with these kind of things, and this one is kind of like at the. Like close to the beginning after the characters have all started talking to each other. And I just thought this was a really good way of putting it because like it's really about grief. It's about having lost somebody and then being in that really heavy place of grief where, you know, and what's the thing that people always say whenever there's a loss? It's like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say at this moment. And, you know, so we all just kind of grasp at the same things, you know, like, you know, you have my sympathy, like you have my blah, you have my blah. So I just thought the way that she said it was really beautiful. So
it was.
Yeah, no, it was. Good old Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah. Old Jenny. She really knows what she's talking about. Also, I like the way that it says, you know, we recount the old beats of other stories. You know, we do what we've already done in these type of situations because it's just kind of what we fall back on. And then we cling to the way things are always done. You know, it's like, you know, like you have the meal, you have the condolences, you have the reception, you know, whatever yeah. It is. It's like, because no one knows what to do. And we're all just kind of, and even people who aren't necessarily feeling the loss, like you want to show up for people, you want to be there for them. But it's like, well, how am I supposed to do that? And so it's like, we all kind of just go back to these rituals as a way to give ourselves some semblance of guidance while we're really at a loss. So anyways, I just thought it was really beautiful. Okay. All right. Tone shift big time. For Mr. Spencer Tracy, so selflessly engaged in the pursuit of the missing fortune, and for all those professionally engaged in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Sister Winifred.
I love this. Reading out Sister Monica Jones.
nonsense basically.
Well, I just, this was also just such a funny little scene because you start off and Sister Julianne is just holding her hands there and she's just like, yeah, like she's, you know, talking, she's like really vibing on the prayer, she's like, yeah, it's okay. And then she gets like the third one, like the nylon and hosiery manufacturers and everything, and she's like, excuse me. And then Sister Winifred is just like going, like loving it. And then she goes, it's a mad, mad, mad. And then like it cuts to Sister Julianne, and Sister Julianne kind of raises an eyebrow and looks at her and she's like, mad world. And it's just so... And then this is when Sister Julianne says, can we skip to the prayers of the sick and needy? And she's like, yep, right away, here we go. And it's just, it's very, very cute.
It is.
Okay. It's lime flavored jelly chopped up to represent grass.
It's a welcome back cake. Is it for Trixie?
No. It's not
no.
It's for the Chinese orphans.
Oh, is it?
So you're getting closer, not all the way there, but yes.
It's Miriam Margolyes.
No.
She's not in it. She's in it.
Not yet.
She does eat it.
No, that's, so you're thinking of a marshmallow thing she likes.
So this is, yeah, okay.
But that did not have the...
Lucille.
No.
Bow. Winifred.
Sister Winifred, yeah. So Sister Winifred is the one who says it, and I can't remember who she says it to. It's either Val or somebody, one of the other girls. But do you remember what she's talking about by any chance?
Is it like, it's a cake for something, isn't it?
It's a cake, and this is decor on the cake. But do you remember what kind of cake it was? This is the Christmas special.
It's a marshmallow covered snowman, isn't it?
Yes, there
oh,
we
no,
go.
Oh no, X is right. Then that is the one that Miriam Margolyes, that Mother Mildred liked.
Well, you said marshmallow something, but snowman cake. Yes, exactly. So basically there's this adorable little snowman cake and he's a snowman because he's covered in marshmallows. So it gives him that whole like puffy body look. But then she says, what's the green down the bottom? And she says, oh, it's lime flavored jelly chopped up to represent grass, which is kind of hilarious because a snowman would not be sitting in grass. A snowman would sit in snow, like hence the snowman. So there really doesn't need to be grass on the thing. But it was just one of those moments where I love this kind of thing, like vintage cookbooks or vintage recipes or, you know, like the, like things from this time period, because they're always trying to make everything into something. You know, it can never just be like a thing. It has to be, you know, like, oh, make it a snowman and then cover it with marshmallows and like do a little thing. And then, you know, you have to make a whole jelly just to chop it up just to have decor. I mean, it's like, why? You know what I mean? Why couldn't she have literally just sprinkled coconut around the edge and just been done with, you know what I mean? It's so funny to me. But that is just so classic for the time. And it always makes me laugh. And you end up with these truly insane, like absolutely tortured foods, and it's
was a special on Bake Off about 25 years later.
I know.
Also,
I know.
Lime jelly or nothing's like, I just cannot abide jelly.
Well, also jelly's okay, but it's not that great. But also it's like, it's gonna fall off. It doesn't go with the cake. Like I will say though, I definitely want to make a snowman cake now. After having seen that,
well, for me, jelly is the epitome of glamour because my mum had a rabbit jelly mold, and it was always this big deal when we were little.
Oh yeah, would she make it like only for Easter, or she'd make it all the time?
She'd make it for our birthdays and Easter.
Okay,
I didn't even like it that much, but it was just exciting.
Okay, all right. So I'm gonna do these next quotes out of order, but I just got to do this one because this is so funny. Bobby, if this is wind, it's enough for me to take off in a flaming up air balloon.
That is the lady that gives birth in the street. I've forgotten her name. Mavis. Mavis Hollings.
Sure. Ooh. I don't remember what her name is.
Yeah, but she's the one who called him a stupid article because he was one.
Yeah, exactly. But this is when...
they have baby Nicholas.
Yeah, like she's about to give birth and he's like, maybe it's just wind. And she's like, you're a dummy. Okay. Now this one I'm going to edit. You'll notice the edit when I say it. I'm blank and I am indefatigable.
Sister Monica Joan.
Nope.
Oh, for flip's sake.
But it is, Nurse but
it
Crane.
It is a nun.
Sister... Oh, Miriam Margolyes. Mildred.
Yes, Sister Mildred. So I had to look up indefatigable because I was just like, that's such a great word and I don't really know what the definition is. Do you guys know what the definition is before I say
it? Of course we don't.
Okay. So indefatigable, fascinatingly enough, means incapable of being fatigued or untiring.
I can definitely be fatigued.
Oh my gosh, I'm very fatigable.
But I'll say I'm fatigable.
But I'll just say this, that she goes, I am Sister Mildred and I am indefatigable. And then she goes, except right now because of blah, 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 blah. And then she goes in this whole long story about what she's just been through and how the only thing she had to claim at customs was her annoyance and she couldn't get a cab and she's got these Chinese babies and she's like absolutely exhausted and they were supposed to do so much more, but they couldn't. And now they're here and she really hopes they have room at the inn. And it was just on and on. And she's just so great. So anyways, yeah.
I love her.
Love Sister Margolyes. And that's all the quotes, you guys. You won the game. I'm very proud of you. You both are equal.
If I'm honest, I'd say Becky. Winners. No, I don't think we're equal. I think Becky has won that one. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. Oh. Well, then I'll give it to Bex. Yes.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Could have been magnanimous. No, Alex, you were great too. No, I'll take it.
That's mine.
Yeah.
Well, and I hope for whoever was listening along at home, they also are gold star winners, and I hope everyone
had
fun listening.
Better than us, Bex, let's be honest.
I love the way you just glossed over Barbara because it was just too sad.
It's too sad.
I'm glad about that. I'm not going to lie.
It's too sad. I mean, I felt like I was very emotional when we were in the episodes talking about it in depth, and I just was like, you know what? I can't. I did do the mature Jenny quote.
We had a lot of old Jenny.
Yeah, I was really feeling old Jenny this time. I was really, she was just speaking my language. So
that's because we're all hormone. I think we've all synced. Anyway.
Well, right, I just feel like she's like a Hallmark card. It's like, whether we're here or there or up or down, love comes for us all. You know, it's just like.
Like, yes, self-love, Jenny. Anyway, next time we are going to be doing a listener special.
Yep.
So yes, please listen along, and then we're going to be doing the book that we all hate.
Farewell to the East End.
Farewell to that book, my friend.
Yeah.
So should we actually end one quite well and efficiently this time?
Yes. Yes.
So please listen, like, subscribe, all that stuff. You know where we are. Thank you so much for listening. We shall see you next time.
Bye.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.